Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, the thousands of New Yorkers who took to the streets last night weren't just protesting the death of Michael Brown. We'll talk about the fatal police shooting here in New York last week of Akai Gurley in a public housing stairwell. Commissioner Bratton has called it a tragic accident, an accidental shooting. Protesters aren't buying it. Brooklyn Borough President and former police officer Eric Adams will be our guest. He's calling for a different kind of policing in NYCHA buildings, and we'll talk generally about life after the Ferguson non-indictment with Eric Adams today. Also today, looking for things to talk about at Thanksgiving with your red state relatives, we'll check out Facebook's findings on what popular culture liberals and conservatives both seem to like. For example, Taylor Swift, The Hunger Games, and The Jersey Shore, The Place Not the Show, are all on the list of things you might talk about to break the ice over Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow. We'll see what else. And we'll share tips for getting to and through LaGuardia, JFK, and Newark airports.
They say no one's ever beaten the Van Wyck. But gentlemen, I tell you this. I came as close as anyone ever has.
Elaine knows. We'll see what you know coming up later. But first, the big article on campus at Thanksgiving break is Rolling Stone Magazine's investigation of campus rape. And it's having an impact. The University of Virginia, have you heard this? Where the main incident described in the article took place has suspended all fraternity activity until after Christmas break. So we will ask, how much is frat culture responsible for campus rape? Should UVA ban its frats permanently? And what about other schools? Joining us now is the writer of the Rolling Stone article, Sabrina Rubin Erdley. Sabrina, thank you very much for coming on today. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Jed Rubenfeld, Yale law professor, who had an opinion piece in the New York Times last week called Mishandling Rape. Jed, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thanks.
And Jed, be patient for a few minutes while we get some of the basics on the table here for listeners who haven't read the Rolling Stone article. And Sabrina, first, I just have to acknowledge out loud the shocking brutality of the fraternity gang rape as you describe it at the top of your article. The poor freshman girl, Jackie, just starting her college career, wooed by a high-status junior, as you describe it, and then just raped and raped for 3 hours by this group of guys. Would you describe some of what you documented for people who didn't read the article?
Sure. The article begins with a freshman named Jackie, who she was 4 weeks into her freshman year. She was having the time of her life at University of Virginia, and she had been asked out on a date by this handsome junior who took her to a fraternity party. And while at this party, he took her upstairs to a bedroom where she said it was pitch black inside, and there were 7 men waiting inside who then for the next 3 hours took turns raping her while her date and another man stood by giving the men encouragement and instruction.
I mean, this is not your vague circumstances date rape, which is getting most of the attention these days. This is like a thuggish street gang attack. So did you tell this story as a shocking outlier, as, you know, a way to shame UVA in particular, or just tell a, you know, a horrific extreme story, or as an example of something that you think is a larger problem on campuses across the country?
Well, the reason why her story really stood out is obviously because it was so extreme. But the reason why I used it was because her story, what really shocked me about her story was that her story was treated by her peers and by the administration much like stories of, let's call them typical, you know, sort of rape allegations, that they were treated, she was kind of brushed off by her friends and by the administration. When she told her friends about it, they either didn't believe her or they downplayed the situation. They encouraged her not to report it because they said that it would kill her reputation on campus. And eventually when she did report it to the administration, the administration did nothing about, they did nothing with the information. And they even continued to do nothing even when she eventually told them that she had become aware of two other women who were also gang-raped at the same fraternity. So the idea that even in a case that was so extreme as Jackie's, that there would be this level of indifference, it was it really opened up a window into what was really happening on campus with regard to, you know, rape cases in general.
So if there are any college students listening right now, call up and talk about how much rape, date rape or other kinds, you think there is on your campus, how seriously your school takes it. Conversely, you can talk about the kind of new generation of anti-rape rules, which we'll get into with Jed Rubenfeld in a minute, which he thinks are in some cases wrongheaded and may exacerbate the problem in the name of trying to fix it. But college students, first priority. Anyone else, campus associated, any parents, anyone else at all? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Certainly anybody who's read the Rolling Stone article by our guest, which has been going quite viral online on campus and around the country in general, 212-433-9692. Let's have some of this discussion. So, Sabrina, the UVA president has apparently reacted to your article by suspending all fraternity activity until January. Is that the official response you were hoping for?
I had no expectations as to what was going to happen. I mean, I wasn't expecting it to be this widely read. But I think that it's a first. I mean, it's a good first step. I think that people are reacting to it differently. The shutting down of the fraternities for a short time. Some people are mistaking it as a slap on the wrist. Other people are kind of celebrating that this is the end of fraternity culture at University of Virginia. I don't think that either is correct. I think that this is just them hitting the pause button appropriately so that they can hopefully start to take some thoughtful steps about what to do next. Because I do expect some dramatic changes in the future, but I think it's really important that those changes be thoughtful and not just something that is swift and symbolic.
What dramatic changes, as you put it, do you expect?
Well, that's hard to say. I mean, this is an administration that has a lot of problems. And I should say that this is not uncommon to, I mean, you know, this is actually very typical of many colleges, of the kinds of things that they have on their plate to fix right now. They have a situation where it seems to me fraternities are basically calling the shots at this university, where sexual assault is rampant, where sexual assault survivors are afraid to come forward, where those few people who do come forward to the administration seem to be discouraged from moving their cases forward or from reporting to police. And finally, where perpetrators are very rarely ever punished. So those are a lot of different areas that need to be addressed.
And before we bring in Jed Rubenfeld, how much do you think frat culture, rather than UVA culture, rather than alcohol culture, whatever other piece you want to separate out, is at the root of campus rape there and the ignoring of campus rape there?
I mean, fraternity culture certainly contributes to the problem of sexual assault. In the article, I talk a lot about party culture and how that culture can really set the backdrop for sexual assault. And much of the partying at UVA happens at fraternities, which is, you know, the case at a lot of schools. Fraternities have become, for some reason, a place where there's a lot of misogyny. A lot of really bad behavior towards women tends to be tolerated as normal, and that has real-world impact on their behavior. There are studies that show that fraternity men are 3 times more likely to commit sexual assault than non-affiliated men.
Huh.
So this is a big problem. I don't know that shutting down fraternities is necessarily the answer, though. I mean, my hope is that fraternities are going to embrace this as an opportunity to turn things around, because I don't think that fraternities have to be places that are drenched in misogyny and rape tolerance. I mean, I'd like to think that that's not an essential part of the fraternity identity. If I'm wrong, then they should be shut down. But, you know, if degrading women is a key part of their culture, then they've got to go.
Yeah.
But I suspect that that doesn't have to be happening, you know, that they don't need to be places that foster misogyny.
When did your article come out?
It came out online on Wednesday. I think it came to newsstands I don't know, yesterday.
Oh, really? So this week. So this is this is a pretty quick firestorm that your piece has caused and pretty quick reaction. So Jed Rubenfeld, Yale law professor, your opinion piece in the New York Times, Mishandling Rape, came out on the 15th. I see. So before the Rolling Stone article, have you read Sabrina's piece yet?
No, I haven't. Of course, I've heard and read about the terrible, awful rape that was, you know, described in the story.
And you portray a campus-based system of rape enforcement that winds up both in too many rapists going unpunished and too many innocent men being found guilty of sexual assault in campus proceedings. How can both be true?
Well, let's start with the fundamental problem, which is the appalling numbers of sexual assaults, of rapes happening on college campuses. So about 3 to 4 out of 100 college women say that they are actually raped in the kind of way that is being described in the Rolling Stone piece. That is to say, what you were describing as the outlier case, forcible rape. A total of about 10 out of 100, that's, you know, 10% say that they were raped altogether. That includes people having sex with them when they're incapacitated by alcohol or other drugs. This is a heinous, staggering number, 10%, and we are failing the victims of college rape. Here's what's happening. Rapists never go to jail, almost never. Why is that? Well, in part, for very good reasons, the victims of sexual assault do not report to the police. They know that the arrest rates are low. They're afraid they won't be believed. They're afraid that they'll be mistreated. So fewer than 5% of female rape victims from college ever report to the police. And that's in contrast to the nationwide number, where it's more like 35% report to the police. So we have a terrible problem of the criminal justice system failing the victims of female victims, especially of college assault. And what are we doing about that? Well, since 2011, the federal government has been insisting that universities prosecute and adjudicate these cases. And that's just not the answer. Colleges are not competent to handle these cases. They are making mistakes. They dismiss rape charges when they shouldn't. And probably they're finding some people guilty when there was no assault. You're getting the worst of all worlds.
Therefore, Jed, more should be referred out to law enforcement when there are charges?
We've got to find a way to bring law enforcement into this. You know, what's happening is, look, there's research that indicates that over 90% of campus rapes are committed by fewer than 4% of college men. So what we have is a problem of serial rapists who get away with it and don't get punished and don't go to jail. And if just a couple, you know, these guys are doing what they're doing, if they, you know, if all that happened just as described in Virginia, they're doing what they're doing with impunity. They know that people don't go to jail for this. If we can send a few of these guys to jail, this will have an enormous effect, because right now we're not deterring anything. And the other half of the problem is alcohol. You know, there's tons of evidence that rapes on college campuses involve alcohol. And what's happened is, you know, we've done prohibition. We say that college kids can't drink till they're 21. Well, of course, that just drives it underground. That creates this party scene where alcohol and, to some extent, other drugs are available and drawing people to parties that are controlled by men, male-controlled, male-dominated spaces. And that, sad to say, is a recipe for sexual predation. You know, not long ago, when alcohol could still be sold and consumed by people 18, on college campuses, there were grown-ups and security personnel at large parties who could, you know, supervise and monitor. Well, right now the adults can't be there because, you know, you're not supposed to be aware that anybody's drinking. So we have this really foolish system where the schools are turning a blind eye to the alcohol party scene at frats and other all-male clubs, and that is just another incredibly foolish thing. In other words, colleges should focus on prevention. They should do that by, they should not be so foolish about their alcohol regulations. They should not be focusing on adjudication, which they don't do well. In fact, they make mistakes all the time. And here's the real problem. If the college gets it right, and if the college, let's say, expels these guys at Virginia, that is not a punishment that's sufficient to the crime. Even if they got expelled, that leaves them free, that leaves them at large, that leaves them able to commit rapes elsewhere. That is not the way to deter a crime.
Jed Rubenfell, Yale law professor, who wrote the opinion piece you may have seen in the New York Times Sunday Review last week, Mishandling Rape. Sabrina Erdley from Rolling Stone magazine, who wrote that piece that's being so widely shared in the last few days about rape and the ignoring of rape at the University of Virginia, which has now almost instantly resulted in the suspension of all fraternity activity there until after Christmas break. And our board is full of your phone calls. Let's hear from a few people. Sophie in Poughkeepsie, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sophie.
Hi. I'm a freshman at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering that coming from a campus that does not have Greek life and is not particularly charged with this macho he-man attitude that comes with fraternities, as to why we think these rapes and allegations of sexual assault are not reported to the police as an emergency call, but rather reported to administration. I mean, this is not something, you know, being caught drinking in your room or smoking in your room. This is rape, and sexual assault is a very serious crime. And so I was wondering as to why this isn't reported directly to the police.
I'd be curious to hear both your answers to that. Sabrina, based on your reporting, can you answer that question?
Yes, I think there are actually two dimensions to this. One is the way that rape has come to be perceived, which this was kind of a surprising aspect of my reporting, is that even though we talk about rape as, you know, everybody's anti-rape, it's, you know, mm-hmm. everybody talks about it as being a violent, you know, it's a very violent crime. But when faced with, like, an actual rape victim, the general public doesn't tend to see it as the serious violent crime that it is. We prefer to see it as some kind of error in judgment, you know, a muddy social faux pas, and not like a serious crime. And mm-hmm. Rape victims themselves, because they're in a certain level of denial that something terrible just happened to them, you know, nobody wants to see themselves mm-hmm. victimized like that. They will often try to convince themselves that maybe this was not a serious crime that was perpetrated upon them. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that we in the general public tend to discuss it in this, you know, frame it in those terms. So there is often a delay in calling police because we are just not framing it in terms of seeing it as a violent crime. But the other dimension to it is that just as Jed had said earlier, is that police don't have a great track record in terms of pursuing rape reports. I mean, this is kind of the sad reality here, is that in an ideal world, a rape victim would call police and they would pursue it, and then the prosecutor would prosecute it and the rapist would go to jail. But in reality, you know, these are they tend to be very complicated cases that require a certain level of expertise. These are cases that, you know, generally there aren't witnesses, there's generally alcohol involved, and somewhere along the line, law enforcement very often says, you know, we just don't want to deal with this. So I think that better training is going to be necessary in order to so that rape victims feel like they're in good hands when they go to report to law enforcement.
Jed, as a legal expert and as a faculty member on a campus, what would you add?
Well, two things. It is scary for a victim to go by herself down to the police station. She would have to give her own name, lose confidentiality. She might be treated suspiciously by the police. It will be scary and lonely for her to go to the hospital to get the rape kit processed. Women victims need, first of all, we need a retraining of the police. And I'm in touch with police departments in college towns, and they know it. We need to retrain the police so that they are more receptive and treat these claims respectfully. But what I propose in my piece is that colleges should be sending a lawyer down with that victim, down to the police station, to encourage her to go down and to make sure her rights are respected, to make sure she's treated appropriately, to make sure the police handle the claim correctly. And then they should send a counselor with her to the hospital to get that rape kit. We need to encourage more victims to report. The second piece of it is, you know, perversely, paradoxically, the new college sexual assault procedures offer women and men victims of sexual assault a better alternative right now. They keep confidentiality. They get a lower standard of proof. They are treated more respectfully, as of course they should be. And so the vast majority of college sexual assault victims now choose to report to their university, not the police. Exactly the wrong result, because colleges cannot handle the claims and their punishments are not sufficient to deter anybody.
Tom in Hillsborough, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I've been listening to this discussion with some interest. Just very briefly, by background, I was a prosecutor and I'm now a criminal defense attorney. I disagree fundamentally with many of the premises that are being floated here. Very specifically, not mentioned by your people, is that a lot of allegations of sexual assault to begin with are fraudulent and not accurate. That has been proven demonstrably. That's number one. Number two, the general attitude that's being fronted here is that whenever somebody makes a complaint, that it therefore must be true. There's no disagreement by me that the colleges are not set up to adjudicate these type of allegations. The attitude of both of your people, the law professor and this reporter, about how police and district attorney's offices treat rape allegations, in my experience, is completely wrong. So I think you're really sort of doing a disservice by misrepresenting what actually occurs, by exaggerating a problem that probably does exist, but is being used for different purposes. I mean, that's sort of my general comments.
When you say used for different purposes, what are you accusing who of?
Well, more specifically, for example, there's a woman at Columbia University who, where I actually went to school, who apparently is walking around campus with a mattress as a form of protest of the way her claim was adjudicated within the school system. My understanding of the facts, based on the article in the New York Times, was that she had consensual sex with someone, and the issue was that she did not consent to anal sex, but she did consent to traditional sex. That type of case, in my opinion, is not something that anybody could really ever successfully prove. Meanwhile,
let me stop you for a second and ask if the main distinction that our guests, particularly Jed Rubenfeld, yeah, law professor, is getting at, is that the actual criminal justice system, rather than campus authorities, are better prepared to handle these allegations. Why wouldn't that be true
for
false allegations as well as true allegations?
It is 100% true. All these claims should be set up in a way through these colleges that have resources, and every college does, to adjudicate the claims correctly and assist the victims. They're not set up now to do that. They're transitioning to do that, so I don't disagree with that. But what I do disagree with is this kind of hysteria that seems to be developing about these issues. You know, I cited to your call screener an example of a case I know of from a college that I attended where a victim, alleged victim, showed up over a year later claiming that she now remembered that she'd been raped by someone who was a alleged friend. I mean, that case just doesn't have any merit.
Tom, thank you for your call. Jed Rubenfeld, what are you thinking listening to Tom?
Well, I mean,
Some cases are going to – I'm not exactly even sure of his point because, yes, some cases
– Actually, do you mind if I
– Oh, Sabrina, please.
I mean, I'd like to say – I mean, he's trying to – I believe that one thing that he's trying to say is that many of these reports are false, but I would like to say that that is actually categorically not true. There's been research on this that shows that somewhere between 2 and 8% of rape reports are either false or what they call unfounded, meaning that 92% of them are actually true. So there's this myth that, you know, all these people are coming forward with these false allegations, but nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, these are genuine, and I think that these are one of these rape myths that actually tend to keep victims from not reporting because they think that they're not going to be believed. And that has historically been the case. I mean, I think what's different in this cultural moment than ever before is that for the very first time, rape victims are being believed. And that's why we're seeing so much discussion about, rape in the military, rape on college campuses, Bill Cosby. It's all coming together right now because for the first time, we're allowing ourselves to have a general discussion in which we're giving rape victims some credibility.
Claire in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Claire.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
I just graduated from Columbia with my master's, and I graduated from Georgetown in 2013. And I have more of a comment than a question, but Georgetown doesn't have fraternities, but it is a pretty privileged place, I would say, and we have quite frequent contact with UVA. And I kind of wanted to say that I think while fraternities maybe are a good thing to focus on in a lot of these schools, it seems like sort of more environments of privilege and superiority and lack of transparency generally are the problem. I went to also elite boarding school. Most of my family and many of my friends did as well. And someone who's really, really close to me was actually raped in a very similar situation to what the Rolling Stone article described, but at the age of 14 and at an elite boarding school. And she didn't report the situation for many of the same reasons that Jackie in the article didn't report. And I'm assuming all of those men went off to elite colleges as well, and many of them would have had the choice to join fraternities. So I just wanted to sort of get comments on sort of cultures that are similar to fraternities and how to sort of prevent that sort of environment from developing in the first place.
Yeah, it's well stated in a great question. If this can happen, and we're almost out of time, but Sabrina, if this can happen at Georgetown, which doesn't even have fraternities, she says, just as it could happen at UVA, is there some common culture element that needs to be the focus here rather than fraternities per se?
I think she raises a great point. I think that entitlement and narcissism play huge roles in sexual assault. People taking something, feeling entitled to take something that is not theirs. And fraternities have not cornered the market on that, on entitlement and on narcissism. So I think that any culture that holds itself as elite is perhaps prone to this kind of thing. But, you know, it's worth saying that even though I drilled down on University of Virginia, and that's what I focused on, part of the reason why I focused on it is because I felt that it was a culture that was representative of what's going on at a lot of places across the country. So I really can't emphasize this enough. I was not saying that this is only happening at University of Virginia. Just the opposite. I'm saying that what's probably happening at University of Virginia is really what's happening everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Jed, a last thought from you, because in your article you do recommend ways to go forward more productively to deal with the problem. What's at the heart of it?
Well, I think we should walk back a little bit. I do not believe myself that the problem is correctly described as, we have a rape culture in America or on college campuses. Again, the research suggests that over 90% of rapes are committed by 4% or fewer of college men. What we have is a problem of a relatively small number of rapists, serial rapists. We need to do something about them.
Overrepresented in fraternities, if you know those stats, Jed?
We do have stats that indicate that men in fraternities are more likely to commit sexual assault and that victims who go to fraternity parties are more likely to be assaulted. But what we need to do is focus our attention on deterring and stopping that small number of rapists who from committing rapes in future, not thinking that what we have is a general, elite male rape culture, so that the entire we're sort of damning the whole culture and not focusing on the real problem, which is to punish and deter and stop those who are committing these rapes.
More punishment of those caught.
More deterrence and more prevention by universities. We have to get inside. We have to break the link between all male clubs like fraternities, alcohol, and the party scene at these colleges. That's not impossible to do, and we have to do it.
Jed Rubenfeld, Yale law professor, who had an opinion piece in the New York Times last week called Mishandling Rape. He's also co-author of the book, The Triple Package, How Three Unlikely Traits Explain the Rise and Fall of Cultural Groups in America. And Sabrina Rubin-Eardley, who wrote the Rolling Stone article on rape at the University of Virginia, which has gone so viral and resulted in just a matter of days of the UVA president suspending all fraternity activity until after Christmas break. Thank you both very much for coming on with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the thousands of New Yorkers who took to the streets last night weren't just protesting the death of Michael Brown. We will talk with the Brooklyn Borough President and former police officer Eric Adams next about the fatal police shooting here in New York last week of Akai Gurley in a public housing stairwell. We will also get Eric Adams' take on Ferguson. Stay with us.